IFSA is an organization of fire service personnel dedicated to upgrading firefighting techniques and safety through training. Between their manuals, ebooks, apps, curriculum, exam prep, Resource One, and more, firefighter training has never been more customizable than with IFSA FPP products. Visit them at ifsta.org for more information. Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
Rescue. Message received.
Welcome to this edition of Buildings on Fires Taking to Streets. I'm your host, Christopher Naum. As always, a heartfelt welcome to our dedicated and loyal program listeners and to our ever-expanding following of our newest live listeners and those downloading and listening to our program on their e-media devices. We are on your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world. Taking it to the streets is all about advancing operational excellence and decisive engagement for the fire service through provocative insights, dynamic discussions dedicated to the art and science of firefighting relative to the built environment and operational perspective. So without ado, we're going to head right into our program and our session on this edition of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets. And we put together a program that primarily is an introduction and sort of a conversation to get us started, culminating the current year as we move forward into 2023 here, talking about the profound influence of building construction, occupancy risks, and research on both company and command decision-making. And that's certainly a lot to be sort of stated in that brief little statement and sentence, but it really is all about having a very decisive and clear understanding of the built environment and its relationship to our decision-making process, both at the company and at the command level, and just about everything that we do on today's fire ground. Certainly we're talking about the structural fire ground, dealing with structural building fires. We're dealing with a variety of different building and occupancy types, and we're going to talk about some of those aspects as we continue to evolve our conversations. Certainly over the past year and into last year, we've had a number of multi-episode programs, multiple editions, three- and four-part series, dealing with some different topical items, all the way from large area residentials and mega mansions, talking about commercial construction, both going from the residential to the commercial environment. And then we had a very robust couple of series programs, a three-part series program on brick and joist construction on type 3 construction, and then also a multi-part series on insights on row house construction. And certainly when we talk about row houses, both inclusive of both row frame and row houses, both the type 3s and the frame construction, certainly this year has presented some challenges regarding that building type and the sacrifices that have been made regarding operations that are in those settings. And certainly, again, there's quite a bit of effort underway behind the scenes, quietly and very diligently, both at the local level for the department that was directly impacted by that event in January of this past year, and then also at the federal level with our good folks at NIOSH that are working diligently to put together the insights, lessons, and learnings and the recommendations that will come out of the investigative report for that particular event. So as I mentioned, our program in this episode is really to set sort of the foundation, clearly lay out the foundation for what will be a number of series and conversations that we expect to plan for and execute in 2023 as we move into next year. But you're going to see a number of different things coming about, both on our program here on Buildings on Fire, Taking It to the Streets on fireengineering.com, but also to expand upon what limited opportunities we have, both in terms of the opportunity to get out in front of our listeners and our loyal followers in terms of the availability of additional content. We will be reaching out and developing some independent programming that will continue to dovetail with our monthly programs here with our good friends here at fireengineering.com to allow us to expand on the topics, get into more levels of detail without encroaching upon many of the other phenomenal programs and presenters that are available through both the live and the archive programs here on Fire Engineering. There is a wealth of continuous information, but again, there's some limitations in terms of the windows in which we have availability to have our programs not only scheduled, but it be able to be produced and actually go live with our audience and our listeners. So we are going to be providing some additional opportunities as recent as within the next couple of weeks for those of you that are listening live or will be listening are listening in on a downloaded capacity here. Certainly as we move very briskly into the month of December, we will have a number of opportunities both in terms of some expanded podcasting on an independent channel, as well as some webcast programs that we're going to be producing. And just keep following us on social media, both on our Facebook pages as well as on our Twitter account for those scheduled dates. We will be offering both daytime for day shift opportunities as well as evening sessions. We will be doing two sessions each day for the course of the month in which those particular topics will be presented. So, again, keep that in mind. We've got a couple of new programs. Well, let me back up for a moment. One of the things that caused us to consider talking a little bit about the influence of building construction and command decision making is that we've actually been producing and delivering this program as a stand-up full type of seminar delivery across the United States throughout the course of this past year in 2022. Most recently, we presented the program in the city of Boston for cadre of both company officers at the Woods level over the course of a couple of days and presented some insights dealing with, again, the fundamentals of construction, the built environment, relative to the dynamics that are certainly occurring within the Boston area. And it was interesting, again, with the conversations, the presentations, the discussions that followed both there as well as the other programs that we've done across the U.S. this past year on this topic. Our program is developed around three different levels of presentation, and each one has a different focal point. There is a general program that just talks about the influence of construction, our term of occupancy risk, and the results and insights that are coming out of research on decision-making as a general type programs. And then we have a very specific program that is designed and developed around the company officer decision-making process and insights, again, at the tactical level, and then the second one, which is at the command level, which, again, gets into different perspectives, insights, and influencing factors. It's a very robust program, both in terms of a short, we have a short version, which is a four-hour program, and then we also have a full-day and multiple-day program for all the way from metro organizations, metro departments, to the volunteer and the rural settings, both in terms of suburban, urban, and the rural settings, both for volunteer combination and a career metro-sized organization. So just a little bit of insight on some of that perspective. So, and again, we are live currently. We will be taking some callers as we get into the program a little bit. So if you are listening in, hold off on doing any call-ins until we actually have an opportunity to present some of the formal material that I want to get out in front of everyone and allow us to start the conversation and get into that level of information. So again, just as a recap, our guest call-in number is 760, area code 760-454-8852. If you're interested in calling in a little bit later into the show, as time permits, but we do have some formality in our presentation. We always enjoy having our conversations with many of our guests that come online, both our good friends that are normally part of our continuous regulars, per se, as well as those that are calling in to hopefully just engage and get into the conversation. But we don't have anyone specifically set up or planned for on this episode, again, due to the fact that really get some information across, establish some insights on what this means, and again, dovetail in with much of what we've already talked about in many of our other episodes. For many of you that have followed our show over the course of a number of years, we've certainly been on the air both on Fire Engineering's platform as well as our early days on our original platform back starting off in 2009 and 2010 when we went national. So we were actually very much involved as some of the early innovators of the platform of podcasting and had the opportunity to really delve into a lot of different aspects of that. But again, just to reiterate, we do have a lot of great archived programs that will further give you the insights on our process, our methodologies. We present and discuss a number of different attributes dealing with our building facts model, and that being the first arriving construction tactics and safety, our five-star command model, which revolves around five distinguishable and interrelated domains that are fundamental to all fireground operations, and then our continuing advocacy when we talk about trying to simplify the complexity of the built environment to a level that's comprehensible, both at the firefighter to the company to the command level, but also that allows you the opportunity to further the level of knowledge and delve into these other areas that are so much needed for the job, but yet are usually not part of the conversation by virtue of the fact that just no one is connecting these dots in the same fashion that we have been doing so over the last 20 to 22 years. Certainly once we started moving into some other social media arenas and opportunities, both in terms of our websites, our blog sites, our social media, we've really had the opportunity to really get a lot of information out there, much of which has been institutionalized very subtly in the background and many types of activities, and even to the point where a lot of that information has been expanded and introduced in both written, published formatting, as well as interject to others' training programs and methodologies and practices and so forth. So just a lot of moving parts that are out there that we continue to move forward. I will make mention here also, since we're talking about programming both past as well as coming up, you know, our Buildings on Fire product line and really our themed elements there. We do have these lecture series that I mentioned that will be coming up here in the month of December, just some very opportune special topic webinars and podcasting. But I will also offer to you, to our listeners, that we have an exciting series coming about very early on in 2023 dealing with our Fireground Architecture Series and the Anatomy of Building Construction Series, the ABCs, the Anatomy of Building Construction. And we're going to be offering these sets and deliverables in both a webinar and podcast basis that will start off with the Anatomy of Building Construction. There will be a multi-part series that talks about just understanding the ABCs, the anatomy of building construction, structural systems, reading the building, occupancy risks, methods and materials of construction, the characteristics and compromise of buildings, and fire dynamics within buildings and the five-star command model. And then very quickly in the first quarter of next year, we're going to be expanding and having a special topic series specific to Main Street, old school hazards on today's fireground, and talking about, again, the whole element of both existing and reutilization of our older Type 3, Type 4 structures. But, again, we're going to provide a very formal perspective on the principles of Type 3 construction and structural support systems, the principles of Type 4 construction, again, and structural support systems. We'll focus in on another episode on roofs, cornices, facades, storefronts, and accessories, and then talk about alterations, renovations, adaptive reuse of both 3s and 4s, and then round that out with the predictability of performance dealing with compromise, collapse, and tactical operations. So that is just sort of a sneak peek of some of the upcoming items, and then we're going to have some programs on mega mansion series, on wood frame structures, on brace frame construction, and also an exciting program that's going to continue to be expanded upon dealing with row house and row frame construction and operational insights, with a very significant expanded section on some very new concepts that we're presenting on both vacant and abandoned building structures. So a lot of cool things coming about as we move into 2023, both here with our good friends at fireengineering.com, and some things that we're hopeful will be submitted and published through the Fire Engineering product line, both online and within the print version. And then we are also hoping to have the launch of our new websites and blog sites and our portal that will really expand upon our previous Buildings on Fire pages, our Fireground Leadership pages. We've got a new page and platform calling readingthebuildings.com, thefiregroundofficer.com, FiregroundLeadership.com, BuildingsOnFire.com, and a whole variety of good, cool things coming about from there. So some really exciting things for all of us. So when we talk about yesterday's fireground and today's fireground, it really needs to be something more than just 8 seconds worth of conversation and 144 characters. And again, we have a distinctive dynamic that continues to occur within the American Fire Service, and sometimes, again, based upon my opportunities to travel extensively around the United States, some things are very localized at the very local level. Other things are regionalized, and some are other even more at a higher, more regional level relative to the United States in terms of geographical regions outside of the state level. And there's a lot of push and pull, a lot of dynamics, a lot of conversations, good and bad. And again, when we talk about yesterday's fireground and the dramatic differences, unfortunately, with today's fireground, they are not the same, although similar. They are very dissimilar in many characteristics and form as such. So with that being said, when we talk about some of those elements and we talk about, you know, some of the activity levels, we talk about our fire calls, our service calls, our runs, our incidences, we talk about the types of jobs, large and small, simple, complex, demanding, overwhelming, right? This is not the fire ground, nor is it the fire service of the 1980s, the 90s, or the early 2000s. And we talk about specifically the things over the last 22 years. I mean, it's hard to really put our heads around the fact that 22 years have elapsed since the since we transitioned from, you know, the 21st from the 20th century into the 21st century, and how dramatic these changes are, both subtle and dramatic. And again, it's sort of that yin and yang when we talk about those particular elements. Today's fire ground presents operational challenges, presents risks and demands. And again, how do you identify, how do you assess, how do you manage your operations and your risks? How do you manage the built environment that continues to exist outside the apron, outside the overhead doors of your fire station that comprise your first due, your second due area, your geographical boundaries of your community that your department may have a degree of protection on, as well as your mutual aid, greater alarm, and automatic aid response areas? How are you managing? How are you keeping abreast? Are you staying relevant with the built environment? And when we talk about those aspects of operations and risks, are we managing them? Are you managing and accessing and identifying, or do they manage and control you and your company from that standpoint? And it's an important thing to think about. All of these things have very significant variables of risk. There are margins of safety that are both inherent, that are induced, that are introduced, that are apparent, perceived, they're real, they're overstated, they're respected. They may not be recognized. They may be neglected, dismissed, and sometimes even rationalized. And that's sort of a rhetorical question that's out there, because it's all true to the organizations and to many of us that are thinking and listening in. And sometimes we are very reluctant, or we refuse to acknowledge that these are, in fact, the way things are in our streets, in our first due. And again, your risks may not be the same as my risk perception when we talk about it from an officer or commander, or from company to company or department to department. You're running, you know, a box alarm, and you've got a variety of different units coming in. Do you have consistency within the organization with the companies at hand? And do you have consistencies within the organization from shift to shift, tour to tour? From department to department, we talk about mutual aid and greater alarms and so forth. I mean, there's just a lot of different working parts in this when we talk about that built environment. And ultimately, it goes back to the question, are we risk-prone or are we risk-adverse regarding those particular aspects of what we may have? And naturally, all of our fire ground operations, both past and of the recent, all have lessons and learnings. They have insights. They have precedent. They have precedents, they have historical context, they have a basis. All of these influence our conditioned, what we call our conditioned tactical reflex, in which we both train, we condition, and we prepare ourselves for the types of situations within the structural fireground setting, dealing with our buildings, those things that, again, are common, that have a reoccurrence, both in terms of the predictability of the building performance, the predictability that we try to project relative to fire dynamics within that building, within the compartment, within the floor, and how it's going to travel, and then our own predictability relative to company performance when we talk about the most critical element, and that being human performance, the human performance aspect of our companies. And again, sometimes our collective or individual being at the company level, collective at the box alarm or greater alarm assignment, that conditioned tactical reflex may be correct, it may be faulted, and again, it also may be inaccurate. And the question goes back to, you know, are you programmed for your built environment and your operations based upon today's demanding fire ground? And if we had the opportunity to do a face-to-face, you know, we'd get into some dialogue and our discussions here. And that's what we're hoping to do with an upcoming webinar. So as I mentioned, one of the things we wanted to do here on this particular episode is sort of lay the groundwork out, talk about some different elements and aspects of it that we are going to expand upon. We certainly don't have the availability due to the limitations of both time in a podcast type of setting and the platform. It's certainly not an easy platform where you may have significant amount of information, and here you are listening to the download, and we're already, you know, 60 or 90 minutes into it. It's encumbering, and it's very difficult to to do a single part program that's greater than a 90 or gets into 120 or more minutes of time, which really these topics really demand of them of that. And unfortunately, with our platform here, we have this limitation, and that's why we're going to try to expand and dovetail with our monthly programming here on fireengineering.com to expand upon this externally to continue to build upon it, because these are not singular terminating types of conversations. They really dovetail in and build upon. Each episode can either be a standalone, but it has relevancy to the big picture, and especially when we talk about really some more prescriptive types of things dealing with fire ground operations and the built environment. We have the ability to talk about precise aspects and insights, talking about relationships, strategy, tactics, operations, building performance, how we engage, what we do, time compression issues, command resiliency, tactical windows of opportunity. I mean, just such a multiple faceted degree of conversations. But all we can hope to do is plant some insights, give you some opportunity through our conversation and discussion within these limited sound bites of the podcast to further encourage you to gain some more research, get some more insights, listen in on some of our other programs, and maybe have an opportunity to listen to our programs face-to-face in a live-type settings. And that's where we hope to provide that platform through our webinars, both through some of the publishing groups that are out there, as well as some of the independent elements as such. So I think we have seen, so the month of December, and although I didn't want to really delve too much into it, but the month of December is and has been a very significant month historically within the fire service. There are numerous events and incidences that have occurred, and many times we can call them history repeating events that we continuously discuss in our presentations when we do our face-to-face programs and deliveries, whether it be at FDIC or some of the other national programs that we deliver on the local or regional type basis. We talk a lot about history repeating events, but a couple of them that come to mind here based upon the month of December, and again, we're just very quickly coming up on a very significant anniversary here on December 3rd, which represents the events that surrounded the Worcester cold storage fire, the building of Type 4 construction in Worcester, Mass, that occurred on the 3rd of December in 1999, in which six firefighters lost their lives. A significant event, one of the most significant events at that time as we were leading into that time, and certainly as we moved slowly into the early 2000s, a number of other events certainly have occurred that, again, are part of this assemblance of events and incidences, things that each and every one of you should know about. You should be literate. You should be conversant. You should have the ability to talk about just the particulars as well as the specifics of what went into that event, the lessons, the learnings, and really to truly honor the sacrifice of our brothers and sisters that lost their lives in these events. So we've got Worcester, Mass. From 1999, the double line of duty death that occurred in the city of Chicago relative to a shallow bowstring truss failure on the 22nd of December that occurred in 2010. Breckenridge, another significant event that continues to be talked about. But again, all of these are fading lessons. The further we get away from these, as well as many other events, the continuing challenge for the fire service to remember and recognize and be able to talk about these lessons and learnings. And I say that very specifically and directly because of, as I travel, we ask the questions, we present the information, and I normally pose and raise the question saying, how many of you can tell me something about a particular event? And as in the course of our programming and presentations, and it's very disheartening when fewer and fewer hands are being raised, and in some instances, no hands get raised. And individuals, both at the command and the chief, as well as the company officer level, cannot recall the event, have no ability to converse about any of the particulars, or have a faint level of insights. They may not know exactly about the particulars. They may not be able to recite how many line of duty deaths there were or even the year, which, again, further it's disheartening. It's just disheartening when we say we'll never forget, and we continue to see these fading lessons and learnings. And even going back to a very significant event that I lived through, not directly, but at that time there were just a lot of things I was teaching at the community college level, and there was quite a few of conversations that we were having relative to this event, especially in its proximity to my hometown in upstate New York in Syracuse, and that was the event that occurred in Buffalo, New York on December 27th in 1983, in which five firefighters as well as two civilians lost their lives in an explosion and subsequent collapse of a building relative to a gas explosion. We've actually, if you go back into our archived, we did have the opportunity to talk about this particular event and really get into some details and insights regarding it on its anniversary, actually on the anniversary date. So I would encourage you to, and that was with Commissioner Mike Lombardo at the time. So former fire chief, former Commissioner Mike Lombardo, and he also worked that job as a very young early firefighter. So some tremendous insights. I would encourage you to go back into the archives here on fireengineering.com, Blog Talk Radio, and take a look and listen in on that, as well as a couple of other very significant archive programs that we have available in the vault. So again, take advantage of that. Pose this question, as we always do regarding our conversations on construction. What do you know about your buildings? What do you know about the built environment in your first stoop? And by that, how much do you truly understand and know? And the second part of that question is, how does that influence your decision making? Is it reactionary? Is it based upon occupancy type? Is it based upon construction type? Is there insights relative to the age and vintage of the building? Is it based upon what is highly predictable that we can assume or project or predict based upon what we know of the past in terms of experiences regarding the building and those conditions and so forth? And again, there may be a variety of different responses that may come about from that, but I would also I'm very confident in saying that the majority of the American Fire Service, both on the career, the metro side, as well as the volunteer and suburban and rural settings, there continues to be gaps. And I'm trying to be politically correct here when I say those gaps are significant in terms of the absence of information and knowledge about our buildings. We know enough to get by. We know enough to be able to do the job. We are what I call functionally illiterate on today's fire ground relative to the measure and depth and degree of what is necessary and the degree of understanding that we need to have in terms of our built environment. We have a very evolving, in today's aspects and capacity, we have a very evolving built environment and a very evolving fire ground, and that has transitioned and evolved into a very evolving built environment and a very demanding and unforgiving fire ground. And those relationships between the two, an evolving built environment, a demanding fire ground, and a very unforgiving type of fire ground, which again all starts and rests with our understanding, our intimate understanding of the building, the occupancy, and other attributes to that. It's safe to say, as we have in our other programs, when I ask the question, pose the question, not only, you know, the question being, what is it that you know about your buildings? More importantly, what is it that you don't know? Where are the gaps? Do you recognize what those gaps may be? Excuse me. And if so, how does that transition into continuing education? What is it that you're doing to align your continuing experience level that you're getting in the street with the demands for advanced level building construction, engineering, fire protection level knowledge in the associated disciplines that are out there? It's also safe to say that, again, and I say this as part of our sort of mantra of conversation in our Buildings on Fire series, but I'll say this, is that our operations are typically performance-driven, And here's sort of the quote-unquote. The building environment is developing faster, with greater complexity, with greater hazards and risks to firefighters and operations than tactical models are providing for, quote-unquote. We have a lot of historical legacy and context, comprehensive in scope in terms of some of the significant size and complexities and layers of our urbanized environments. But it's the same thing when we talk about the simplicity of some of our rural types of settings. Do we spend enough time? Do we invest? Are we seeing the forest from the trees? And again, comprehensive in scope, simple to high tech, complex domains, complex functions, complex layers, and sometimes overwhelming. Overwhelming to the smallest department that does not have the time, nor do they possibly have the degree of experience to gain knowledge. They gain enough knowledge, and through either formal or informal certification and training programs, we gain enough insights to know how to stretch the line, where fire may propagate or extend, how fire may potentially affect the building from a predictability standpoint, so that we're able to size up, select the appropriate identify the appropriate tactics, implement them, and go to work. And we hope that the outcome of that series of decision-making is going to be appropriate, and we are either monitoring or not monitoring the clock. Our benchmark sometimes is guys are working the job and the benchmark is fire out. Well, what happens when fire is not out and there are a series of either isolated or concurrent interrelated factors that affects the compartment, affects the fire floor, affects the building, affects the structure, and affects the survivability and the operability of personnel that are working in, around, on top, and underneath that particular structure. And that is the criticality there when we talk about that. Typically, when we talk about the built environment, especially from the fire service standpoint, it's overwhelming when we talk about building construction. It's overwhelming as a topical and discussion and functional and learning area. It's overtly simplified, I would say, when we talk about what it is that we do learn. It's certainly very easy to take any number of textbooks that are out there that are part of a certification process at the state level. And then also when we talk about the books that are the required reading as part of the reading assignments for promotional exams, the reading list. And they too, again, any of those books are somewhat overtly simplified and filtered in terms of the limitation of information, especially when they align with and only cover the basics of the FESCI model, because of the limitations on how big these chapters can be, how big the ultimate books may be, and therefore we have the basic chapters, we have the limitations of information, and they never go the next step. They seldom, if ever, go the next step. That's why it's so important to have a series of these textbooks. And again, I am certainly not indicating or conveying that any one book is bad versus another. What I am indicating and suggesting and pointing out is that there are limitations to what type of content and information is put within those settings and how they are utilized in the context of training, certification, and the settings, whether it be at the academy setting, whether it be at the college, community college level setting for the programs as such. It takes much, much more, and it should not be a terminal condition in which you've read that particular book, you've taken a class or two maybe, and that's it. The rest of it you're going to gain on the fire ground, or you're going to listen to some podcasts or webinars or go to a conference or two and get some insights. It is all of that and then some. But again, many times we oversimplify, we filter out, we extract, and more importantly, we sometimes disregard, we ignore, and in a great perspective, we dilute down to small sound bites, 2 to 12 hours worth of content, types of presentation, 24 pages, 12 to 14 chapters, 400 pages. We are truly at a grammar school level of knowledge, meaning the fire service in general, is at a grammar school level of knowledge regarding the built environment, construction, the interrelationships of engineering, and the associated disciplines of fire protection engineering and fire dynamics, where we really need to be at the graduate school level. We need to be at that level of comprehension, of literacy, and understanding. We are functionally illiterate. So again, a lot of this is to build additional literacy, become both fire and building literate, develop some suggested and expand upon some suggested operational modeling, ensure that we have an adaptive approach toward our fire ground operations based upon the uniqueness of a building within our first due that you are arriving and going to work. That is all because of the change in the manner in which our model building codes have evolved. We now have a model set of building codes that fall under the International Code Council, International Building and Fire Code. There are consistencies when we take a look at what is now required across the United States, but we also have what's called performance-based standards out of those codes that provide a tremendous degree of latitude to the architects, to the contractors, to the builders, and to the authority having jurisdiction when presented with a set of plans and specifications that have a variety of different materials, assemblies, and systems. As long as it's meeting the intent of the codes and the authority having jurisdiction approves and recognizes that whatever it is that the organization, the developer, the builder, the architect, and such for the client is meeting the intent of that code or superseding the intent of the basic code, and they are bringing forward a whole variety of different materials and techniques and really pushing the technology envelope or creating a very creative way of building this building, both from an economic and functional standpoint of architectural and engineering, you will get a very unique building that falls within the premise of whatever it's going to do performance-wise is going to be identified then and there. And what we have to be able to do is identify the uniqueness of what's being presented during the course and conduct of operations at the strategic and tactical level, and hopefully have critical thinking, conservative bias to identify those reads. We're reading the fire ground. We're reading the building. There's four different elements here when we talk about these reads that we always talk about. It's reading the fire ground, reading the building, reading the compartment slash fire slash smoke, but it's reading the compartment as it relates to fire conditions, and then reading the company. Those are the four common interrelated areas when we talk about those reads. And again, when we talk about decision-making on the fire ground, whether it be at the command or company officer level, we may be seeing things, we may be hearing things, but especially when we have visual observations in conjunction with the radio communications, that we may be looking, but we're not comprehending. We may be seeing, we may be hearing, but do we not only comprehend what it is that we're seeing, do we understand the relevancy based upon the evolving nature of the fire ground? And that's where the challenges come about. Combination of the experience, combination of training, combination of these additional advanced levels of insight that allows us to be able to take these observations, take these reads based upon what we're doing, again, tactically or operationally and the management side of it at the command level strategically. Are we able to process this continuous fire ground and building intel and process it in a manner that is expeditious in terms of the quickness, is accurate in terms of when we do make our decisions based upon these variables that sometimes are factual, sometimes are our assumptions, sometimes they're predictions going on best predictions based upon naturalistic decision-making that falls back on experience, falls back on what we've been exposed to, falls back on knowledge, skills, education. I mean, again, there's all of these interrelated elements here. And hopefully we're making the right decisions based upon this knowledge set that we are being called back upon to recognize. And sometimes we aren't, because, again, we aren't utilizing conservative thinking or critical thinking, conservative bias, and the whole aspect of being resilient as well as being disciplined from that standpoint. It really gets into some different aspects when we talk about what we've coined this term. We actually coined this term a couple of years ago and really started expanding upon it over the last 2 years. But talking about the built environment, talking about fire ground architecture, talking about construction, architecture, building components, well beyond just the fundamentals of building construction. It's really incorporating the building sciences, talking about architecture, planning, programming, the whole aspects of what architecture provides in a building, along with the engineering side of structural engineering, how buildings are built, how they operate, how they perform from a building anatomy standpoint. It's really integrating architecture engineering, building sciences, and fire protection engineering and tactical operational perspectives. It's really a cool way of looking at our built environment when we talk about showing up on scene and going to work. And I think the uniqueness of this, because we are looking at this from two distinctively separate sides, if we really cut and dice them. We're looking at it from an architectural engineering side, the A and E side, and we're looking at it from the firefighting side. And fortunately, again, I've had the opportunity to work in both arenas. For those of you that don't know some of my background, again, I've often mentioned, at least in the lead-up on some of our programming and so forth, and again, you can gain some insights online by doing some quick searches and so forth, but I was trained and went to school and actually became an architect, was involved in that profession for a period of time in conjunction with my volunteer fire service career, and became a fire protection engineer, hold the credentials within that area, and there's some again, a lot of cross-pollination. We talk about architectural engineering, the built environment, fire protection aspects, and then firefighting aspects. And that was some things that became very apparent many, many years ago as I was going around teaching and doing some of these programs and really working in the shadows of greatness. When we talk about the late Frank Brannigan, I had an opportunity both to personally meet him and work with him on a number of different projects, both for state organizations as well as some activities at the National Fire Academy. And actually, I'll share this. It's sort of a slight aside, and I'll just mention this because of its relevancy. But I was a very young lieutenant at the time, and I was presenting in one of my very, very early presentations at FDIC, and this is actually FDIC in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's how far back we're going, back in the mid to late 1980s, and actually about the mid-1980s. And I'm doing a program on construction. I had gone to many, many programs and courses. I was still actively working as an architect and working as a volunteer fire officer at the time. And I'm doing a class on one facet of construction, and I'm at FDIC in Cincinnati. The doors are closing, the lights go down, and I'm starting my program. And I'm following, again, in the foot. If any of you had the opportunity to personally witness Professor Brannigan present, he always operated with his 35-millimeter slide trays. It was a dual slide tray presentation with 144 slotted carousel to be able to provide a lot of, I mean, and again, slide carousels came into two forms, one being the 80 version and the other being condensed 144 versions. And he did that because, again, he was trying to really present a lot of information. It was just lock and load, finish off one series of trays, drop in another, and just really quickly present and provide visuals and examples that really created such a very rich experience of learning. Well, here I am as this young lieutenant doing the same thing at FDIC, making it to the big show at a very early age and that opportunity in Cincinnati. So I've got my dual 35-millimeter projectors going in front of me. I've got my 144 dual slide trays going. The lights have already gone down. And this was a much more shallower room so it was wider than it was deep. And as I start talking, and again, if you can think about the lights that are coming off of the and out of the slide projector, the doors that I'm directly facing in the back of the room open up, and in walks a very, very, very large, assuming profile of an individual. And, you know, the lights were on long enough, and again, the lights coming through the door from the outside in the corridor were enough to allow me to recognize that it was Frank Brannigan. And he comes into the room, and unfortunately, he stood in the back of the room at that doorway for the entire 90 seconds. So as I'm presenting, I'm looking directly and trying not to look toward him, but Frank Brannigan was in the room listening in on the program, and again, we finished off the program. I was very confident in what I was doing, and I kept, you know, sort of second guessing myself with the right side and left side voices, you know, trying to give me some encouragement and calming me down at the time. But Brannigan really gave some great, great insights, and we developed a very profound friendship that lasted really all the way up till his passing. And again, actually, even to the standpoint that I think it was, and I'm trying to go remember back, I think it's the second edition. So the second edition of Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service, there's actually some connotations, and in one of the chapters, he actually talks about an article that I had written and some other elements there. So it was really really quite an extraordinary moment of time to not only meet him, work with him, gain the insights that I had gained from him, but then also to be talked about in that particular edition. So it's all part of it. It's all part of connecting these dots on what we really started developing back in the early 1970s in terms of the first, you know, concepts and the first written elements of building construction for the fire service that Brannigan gave us. But again, it's much more expanded from that. We really have the need to look at the dependent professions and disciplines of architecture engineering, of building sciences, of construction, fire protection engineering. They are very consistent, they are stable, but there's also a tremendous degree of rapid evolution. And there's critical interdependence of architecture engineering, building sciences, and fire protection engineering that are not recognized on the fire ground, nor are they recognized by the fire service. And again, that leads into this lack of building and fire literacy. A lot of excuses because of that. It's overwhelming. It's too much. I don't understand it, and so forth. And there's really a failure of the fire service profession to embrace and to advocate and demand the increased need for knowledge, skills, and ability. And again, we keep hearing, you know, it's too technical, it's too much time, it's too overwhelming, and therefore I become functionally illiterate from that perspective. So just some really quick insights, and this is what we really get into in a much greater degree in a formal type of presentation. But even this conversation, this dialogue regarding those particular aspects are important. But today's decision-making has everything to do with three critical elements on the fire ground. It's the building, it's the compartment, and it's the company. It's the human performance elements of our companies, its capabilities, limitations, knowledge, skills, abilities. It is the fire dynamics and what's occurring at the most basic element, and that is the compartment, however large or small, the physical characteristics of that, the ensuing things that we are learning much more of. So when we talk about tying in R&D research and insights from studies and the development of those particular aspects and the formulations and the postulation of the hypothesis and the things that the studies are suggesting and the results of those that, again, are further suggested results based upon the parameters of that particular study and or test. When we look at them, they have, again, everything to do with the fire dynamics and the ensuing things of fire behavior that we are gaining more insights on. We're validating, we're diminishing, we are eliminating more and more anecdotal insight and replacing the anecdotal with empirical data and information that can fully support the next stage of developing appropriate skill sets based upon the evolving aspects of these insights. So when we talk about research and development and the insights coming out of these studies, both singular and the comprehensive and the integrated, they all provide useful information and building intel, parameters and perspectives that can influence our decision making if we're able to, number one, comprehend the big picture and then apply what we know about the big picture to the finite aspects of what is occurring at the what we call the in situ, the things that are occurring in the street at that given time with that building, with the fire, with the operational parameters, with the resources of what we have and putting it all together regarding the time compressor, time constraints, the tactical windows, the resources, and then all of the attributes that are helping us or challenging us during the course of the operation, as well as the other piece, which is going to be the severity, urgency, and growth. What are the mission-critical priorities of the event, and putting those all together within the least amount of time with the greatest degree of efficiency when we put our companies to work, right? It's a lot of different aspects when we talk about that. So it used to be construction-based operations, and by that we would say that in the 80s and 90s, and actually even up and through the early 2000s, we had a continuing degree of emphasis, and even most of our textbooks as they relate to construction strategy and tactics primarily either directly or indirectly talk about buildings, as talk about occupancy type, and we talk about strategy and tactics in a particular building type, occupancy setting, and what are typically the best practices for the optimum staffed type of fire department. And by optimum, we talk about an organization that is well-trained, that there's consistencies in it, that there aren't a lot of variables, that they're well-equipped, well-trained, have knowledge skills, have both mental, physical capabilities, they're staffed at a particular level, there's the availability of robust and adequate numbers of resources in a very prompt, deliberate, and organized manner, meaning the box alarms that get sent out, and the availability of extensive numbers of resources on a subsequent basis. In other words, if I'm striking second or third or fourth or fifth alarm, I'm getting all of the same needed resources at the same level of capabilities, and it creates a sort of panacea of operations. And unfortunately, there are so many different variables related to that and the uniqueness that I started talking about regarding the buildings, regarding our occupancies. There is also this concept of occupancy risk versus occupancy type that plays out into our buildings and into our fire ground reads. And the concept of occupancy risk and type was actually born out of the 2007 Kyle Wilson line of duty death in Prince Williams County, Virginia. And that incident, as it revolved around a residential occupancy of significant square footage, was a large area residential, upwards of that 6,000 square foot capacity, along with fire dynamics, along with, at least at the time, a minimal response category that was, again, minimal standards that is being met regarding NFPA 1710. And we have a square footage, we have a resource, we have a significant operational challenge along with some other environmental as well as construction and material behavioral factors that creates a situation that was very challenging and unfortunately resulted in Kyle's line of duty death. But the learnings and the insights were significant out of the department, and that resonated throughout the United States. I had a good fortune at the time serving on the International Association of Fire Chiefs Safety, Health, and Survival section, and was actually part of a task group that was charged with trying to take the lessons and learnings out of the Kyle Wilson line of duty death at the departmental level and really elevate them into the national arena of conversation. And the one thing that I have been able to maintain from that time frame is continually to talk about and advocate and advance the concept within our fireground modeling a series of what occupancy risk and occupancy type are and how they need to be fully implemented and actually institutionalized in our fireground size-up methods and practices and how they truly get initiated into what we've done is actually formalize it into our modeling and into our dialogue on this influence of building construction, occupancy risk, and research lessons and learnings into decision-making and how that gets expanded out. So there's a lot of different elements to that really provides some of these aspects. You know, at some point, I think we hit the snooze button, and we've had a couple of opportunities over a number of decades. I think the first significant opportunity occurred when under one of the most significant events that have occurred in our generation of the fire service, and that was the Charleston Superstore fire that occurred in Charleston, South Carolina, in June of 2007. That event, again, significant learnings out of three reports, the Routley report, the NIST report, the NIOSH report. If you've never read any of those reports by this point in time, shame on you. You are definitely derelict, or you just, again, maybe depending upon where you are in the fire service and where you came in, you just haven't gotten to that as of yet. But if you are anyone at the rank of a company officer, and especially at a command officer that have any number of years of experience under your belt, and you have not read at least the summaries of any one of those reports, then I would just encourage you to get with it and get that insight and information and become literate of the events of that day and the learnings that came out of that analysis, and truly, truly honor the sacrifice of the 9 firefighters that lost their lives on that particular day. But again, you know, again, it goes back to what we just talked about. We have individuals who've never heard of that event, have never learned about it, never discussed it, and generally speaking, the fire service hit the snooze button, because it was our wake-up call, hit the snooze button, and off we go. The second event, which was a wake-up call, was the Cortland Ave event that occurred in Fresno, California, in which we had a near miss relative to fire ground operations. That was, again, another significant event that should have been an eye-opener and should have really resulted in much more conversation regarding a lot of different aspects on the fire ground and so forth. But again, I think we hit the snooze button on that. The other two events of more recent are the most current degrees of opportunity. The most recent opportunity to gain some insights is the Howard County, Maryland line of duty death of Lieutenant Nathan Flynn that occurred in July of 2018. Very comprehensive report that was issued by the Howard County, Maryland Fire Department, Fire Rescue Department, Combination Department, and again, provides a tremendous degree of insights, lessons, learnings, and things that we should be embracing and are able to internalize. That is the next current wake-up call, and then in addition to that, the most recent publication of the after-action report from Frederick County, Maryland, regarding another large area residential, as was the Howard County, Maryland event, another large area residential, some insights that the department and Frederick County, Maryland did an exceptional job of putting together and provide some lessons and learnings and insights on building performance, operational performance, and so forth. So those are the most current wake-up calls, and again, we've got to be looking at that. So let's go back to some of the aspects of research. So when we talk about research, and again, the evolving fire ground, nothing's routine anymore. We talk about research data, position statements, the push, the pull, the direct, the clarity, the confusion, the conflict. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on. It's literally, again, we go back to the horse-drawn era of time in which we transition from one method and process and the continuing built-out of America in the early 20th century. Again, there was a lot of things that were challenging. There was hope. There was despair. We're going through these cycles. And again, there's this sort of old adage, you know, there goes the job, there goes the service, tradition, cultures gets thrown out. And we go through these cycles of what's new, again, is being rediscovered, something as simple as the rediscovering the Bresnan distributor that went from being on the apparatus to being relegated to a back storage room or being put on somebody's office shelf, and suddenly recognizing that that device is just as important today as was back in the 70s and 80s, in which many of us utilized that extensively, both in terms of interior compartment operations, and we adapted it to utilize in our emerging lightweight engineered truss loft fires in our garden apartments and some other things. There's a whole variety of those different aspects. But when we talk about research, science, data, and these types of insights, what's new and what's old? I mean, there's just a lot of tremendous degree of information coming about through a variety of different organizations. You've got the ULSFRI, you've got the stuff dealing with, again, the Fire Safety Research Institute, you've got Underwriters Laboratory, you've got NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, the NFPA, you've got the NFPA Research Foundation, the NFFF, National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, the National Fire Service Research Agenda Symposium, you've got stuff coming out of DHS from Science Technology Directorate, the American Wood Council, the International Code Council, National Lumber Manufacturers Association, Factory Mutual, the American Forest and Paper Association, and information coming out of NIOSH and the CDC from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, firefighter prevention programs. So all of these things, again, and I'm not forgetting any as we present them, but when we talk about, you know, just being relevant and having some insights, I mean, the first insights we got out of research really go back all the way to 2005. The modern and legacy home furnishing report and study coupled with the structural stability of engineered lumber and fire conditions in 2006. They were the formulative studies that really put UL and NIST on the map in terms of the fire service and really started the conversation. I think the conversation's really expanded certainly over the last few years, going back to some of the insights out of the vertical ventilation and fire tactics study in 2011, the residential fire attic fire study and fire spread in 2012, the basement study fire, both the first version in 2013, and then the more recent version in 2017, and then again the fire attack of interior and exterior survivability, host streams, coordinated fire attack, the wind-driven studies, structural collapse studies from NIST, staffing and operational studies from NIST. I mean, there's just so many different pieces here, guys, and I'm just rattling these things off from trying to again recall some of the things that we constantly talk about, and these are things that you need to be number one aware of, and the second part of that is that we've got to do a better job of connecting these dots. So, and again, we are seeing such an expansive degree of engagement and opportunities coming out of UL and the Institute. Through the guidance and the leadership of Steve Kerber, but there's still so much more to be done, and that's where it falls on many of us to again connect the dots and continue to collaborate in a manner that continues to move the initiatives forward. And the initiatives are all to make the job safer for us to be able to do what? Provide the level of protection that the public demands of us, to make the appropriate to allow us to operate in conditions that truly reflect our fortitude and level of rigor and grit to get the job done for the protection and the well-being of the public. And I would go so far to also say that, you know, not all buildings are savable, not all property, not all belongings are savable based upon the unique types of conditions in both new and old construction that are being presented that result in structural fires that place us within and around, on top, underneath, and so forth of these buildings and occupancies, attempting to, again, mitigate, control, and protect the property, and then also to provide life-sustaining capabilities for the civilians that may be in distress. So when we look at those elements of the studies, we've taken that next step, and I'm not going to go into greater detail in this due to the fact that we're sort of getting closer to our conclusion of our program here tonight. But again, this is what we're doing. We're taking the studies, expanding upon some of the elements, and then tying them into our modeled approach. We first developed these models back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and little did I know at that time that, you know, fast forward 20 years, that a lot of pieces that were missing that may not have been fully expanded completed at the time, there were some gaps in there that the research and the insights is actually filling in. They're filling in concepts that were drawn out of 20-plus years of fire ground experience, observations, exposures, learnings, and so forth, that provided, again, both anecdotal as well as empirical insights drawn from a lot of different sources. And again, if any of you have been a student of the job, you will also recognize that there is a tremendous wealth and availability of studies and research and information and data that can be pulled out of the studies of the 90s and 80s and 70s. And again, even going back into the 50s and 40s and 30s, I've actually been reviewing some of the very early full-scale and limited fire testing that occurred in the early 1900s relative to the emerging concepts of cast iron construction and the emerging involvement of structural steel framing in our early high-rise construction. I mean, there's just such a wealth of insights if we, number one, are willing to seek it out, have some insights on where to go, and then have the time and the diligence and effort to truly commit to gaining the insights, looking at the information out there, and connecting the dots in today's world. And that's what we're doing. That is what is really all about, this concept of taking this information, looking at, again, such things as, and again, some of the terminology never existed up until a few years ago. We talk about, you know, tactical consideration, vent path, flow path. We talk about the issues dealing with basement fires, compartment fires, attic fires, you know, pushing fire, not pushing fires. We talk about, you know, megawatts of energy versus BTU, fire load packages, fire suppression techniques, water mapping, transitional attacks, survivability profiling of the civilian, survivability profiling of the, for the fire service, extreme fire behavior, go and no-go parameters, slicers, dicers, and nicers, right? Everything and anything in between. And all of that, again, is putting a lot of perspective on decision-making, because ultimately it goes back to how am I reading the conditions, what am I projecting, what am I predicting, what do I know, what I don't know. Building intel is becoming more and more accessible and available if the systems are in place. We're seeing a lot more in the availability of command intel and some apps and programming and things that are coming out of what we call smart firefighting. Some really great things coming out of a couple of different groups that we're going to be expanding upon, both our involvement as well as our conversations in that particular element. But they lead to a whole variety of different perspectives. We truly need to develop in the modern fireground, when we talk about fireground architecture and commanders, we've got to take, and again, we're all in these assimilating roles and positions, whether we are, sometimes again, we're operating as firefighters, we're operating as the fire officer, the company officer, the commanders. We are tacticians, we're strategists, we're leaders, we're risk managers, we're safety managers, we're compliance officers, we're engineers, we're architects, we're scientists, we're behavioralists, statisticians, we're leaders, mentors, instructors, and educators. I mean, we've got this whole realm of different aspects to it, but really, my expectation, as should the profession be advocating, is that we got to be thinking. We don't necessarily have to be an architect. We don't have to be an engineer, but we've got to be thinking along those lines. We've got to have those insights that will hopefully influence our decision making based upon a greater degree of breadth, depth, and degree of technical insights into our buildings. It goes back to we're operating at the grammar school level when we should be operating and conducting ourselves with a graduate school level of knowledge. And that is what we are constantly discussing and going into. And I would also say this, is that, again, no amount of technology, no amount of research data, findings, the campaigns, and or process will replace the need and application of skill-based manual human effort and fortitude of a firefighter. So I want to get that clearly straight again, is that I still, as many of us do, we advocate, we truly promote, and I'm convinced that we cannot replace the need and the application of highly skilled-based manual effort, human effort, and fortitude of a firefighter to be operating within the environment and also having command presence, having resiliency, having strength, having rigor, having company and command level grit and fortitude. I mean, that is all part and parcel of all of what we're doing here, and that is part of our conversation, part of our discussions as such. So, you know, we're putting out a lot of information, and again, I hope you guys are able to, you know, keep up with what I've been saying. I've been really sort of getting into the groove here in the conversation. We have not had any call-ins, which, again, not that we were advocating or promoting. We did say it's a live program, so for those of you that are listening live, if you want to jump in and interject with some commentary, I've just got a couple of more notes here that I want to make mention of when we just talk about some things on a more global basis on just some of the challenges, and I just want to provide some insights to that. And again, if we do have some live listeners that are part of our group. So earlier on, I just talked about the art and science of firefighting, and many of you may not know this. I talked a little bit about this on one of our other previous programs. We talked about our building facts modeling. First arriving, construction, tactics, and safety. It's all about our building facts. And we talk about some of these elements of the art and science of firefighting. Sort of become a coined term over the last 10 years, 12 years or so. We actually talked about the art and science of firefighting on our masthead on Buildings on Fire when we rolled out our website back in the latter part of 2007, 2008. But it's interesting, as we did some more research on that, the first fire service book, the first fire service textbook that, or manual per se, that was written was written in the late 1920s. So almost 100 years ago, you know, it's just incredible to think in that terms. But in the latter part of the 1920s, from around 1925 to 1931, this book was being written by the notable fire service professionals that existed at the time, the fire chiefs and the fire officers of the fire service in the late 1920s, early 1930s, all as a result of the orchestration and the leadership of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. It was recognized based upon that group, and actually was the education committee at that time of the IAFC that recognized that there was a continuing gap as it related to the evolving nature of the built environment. We had cities developing and growing. We had new construction. We had high-rises growing out, up and out. We had a whole new technology, and with that technology, new demands on an evolving fire service. And I'm going to read you this. So here's an excerpt right out of the preface of the Fire Chief's Handbook. And that Fire Chief's Handbook was coordinated by Fred Shepard. And Fred Shepard was the author of record for that first definitive book on firefighting that was published in 1932. And I'm going to read this note that I pulled out that's part of our formal program. It says, quote unquote, the firefighting profession has been referred to frequently in recent years as a science in the broad sense of the term, and as practiced by the well-trained modern fire department, it may be so classed. Much constructive thought has been given the subject during the past 3 years, and out of this has come a fairly well-established procedure in combating fire. The great growth in the number of city and state fire colleges and short courses has made a marked effect in developing and making uniform the operations in fire extinguishment. So primarily it's talking about establishing procedures. Fire schools were being developed around the country, especially in evolving and growing urbanized environments, busy fire departments, and they were capturing all of these to deal with the operations of fire extinguishment. And it goes on to state this, probably the greatest handicap in the conduct of fire service schools has been the lack of any comprehensive textbook wherein might be found data on modern tools and equipment employed in firefighting, the nature of fires, methods of extinguishment, procedures in ventilation, covering exposures, performing salvage work, and other essential operations. And that was the basis of that book. So, and again, we actually talk about this in many of our formal face-to-face deliveries. We've talked a little bit about this in our previous podcast on building facts modeling, just a month or two ago. I think we had two installments back in October and the other possibly in the August timeframe, in which we expanded upon that and we talked about some loop issues and some other stuff. So it's just interesting to note that, again, the art and science of firefighting was being considered relevant and in place in 1932. And then suddenly we in the current context, we talk about collar level of firefighting and forget about all these efforts. It's all about stretching the line, going in, manual firefighting, and let's forget about any of these conversations going on, you know, all the stuff about UL and NIST and the science of firefighting and the experience levels. You know, we have all these battle lines that are being drawn when, in fact, we are just going through another reiteration and another cycle. Some of the challenges that relate all to our built environment, just some elements here that I want to cover before we close out our session here. Challenges and impacts, we talk about emerging influencing trends and factors that, again, become the basis of the need to expand our decision-making influence and process because of the built environment, because of additional elements on construction. These are just a series of some bullets and so forth that I'm going to talk about. They continue. Again, we talk about emerging influencing trends and factors is inclusive of rapid changing building materials and methods of construction. It's continued aging of our buildings and our occupancies. The evolving integration of engineered structural systems, what we call ESS, it's well beyond just talking about lightweight construction. It truly is an integration of structural engineered components that are part of the systems, part of assemblies, that are part of building features that go into our buildings. It is the influence of the fire load package, both on fire suppression and on our operations, which gets back into the concept of this whole aspect of the compartment relative to the building. It's the susceptibility of a variety of different buildings, both old and new, to compromise and collapse. The least we hope is that it's a collapse condition or a compromising condition, and what we're seeing is more potential for and actual occurrences of catastrophic failures of both components, assembly systems, and entire building features. It is the size and complexity of our buildings. It's the continuing issues dealing with limited resources in terms of initial response, box alarms, tactical boxes, the availability and the capabilities of those resources on greater alarms. The entire built environment continues to provide stressors due to the evolving nature. Sometimes it's a simple kind of a thing. If I'm in a rural setting, it might be that standalone fast food drive-in restaurant that's going up. But again, it's of a hybrid engineered construction. How is that going to be different than all of the buildings along Main Street that are Type 3, Type 4 construction? Brick and joist construction versus engineered structural systems versus a type of building that has an entirely different tactical window of operation, a different level of performance, a different consideration regarding time that should affect decision-making processes. It's the economic, social, ecological issues, the component systems, assemblies, construction process of our ESS, the engineered structural systems. It's large area residential buildings. Again, both our large area residentials, what we call our mega mansions, and we actually have a term. We have them classified. So many of you are familiar with the antiquated and inappropriate term of calling our large area or our mansion-type buildings, calling them mech mansions, which, again, if you listened in on some of our other programs, we've provided you some insights on how to classify, categorize them. So again, we call them mega mansions, giga mansions, tetra mansions. There are different templates, operational considerations, both from a time factor and operational standpoint, risk factors. It is the continuing issues dealing with the introduction, institutionalization of mass timber construction. It is a continued application and utilization and institutionalization of cross-laminate timber construction, CLT. Probably the biggest two factors along with the introduction and the continuing expansion and construction and occupancy of podium or raised podium construction, where again we're creating some very significantly large footprinted buildings with a degree of complexity, both with mixed-use construction and occupancy, and we've seen the effects of those regarding construction-phased operations. We've seen a couple of occupied building fires in some locations around the country over the last couple of years, but not nearly enough to develop some of the best practices. We're gaining some insights, but we're nowhere near to identify suggested best practice. We have some data points that we are utilizing in some of our programs when we talk about podium construction around the country in some of our building construction series, but again, they all have to be validated and continue to evolve. There is the emerging influence and trends dealing with hybrid commercial construction and systems, the continuing issues dealing with light gauge metal, especially in our Type 2 construction, in the commercial and the multiple occupancy use settings. It is the continued issues dealing with adaptive reuse, renovations, and conversions of our older buildings. The reutilization and the variety of hybrid buildings that we have, the multiple occupancy usages. It is the trends dealing with the same old, when we talk about high-risk, large vacant commercial and industrial properties, the LVCPs, that continue to challenge us, along with the selective or comprehensive reutilization of those high-risk, large vacant commercial industrial properties that now are being turned into very significant and complex centers for both entertainment, social, and other types of usages, along with residential property usages. So we are just creating further challenges on buildings that still are partially old, partially new, protected. Yes, we understand that they are protected properties, but the level of protection is only based on the effectiveness of the construction, based on the effectiveness and the operability of the fixed protection and suppression systems and notification systems that are in there, and we know how that goes. So there are those related issues. There are the continuing challenges and debates and conversations and arguments going around dealing with vacant and derelict buildings, both residential, commercial, and industrial. We have developed some insights that are going to be captured within the NIOSH report for the Baltimore City triple line of duty death that occurred in January of this year that again, we'll provide some insights and some suggested lessons, learnings, and some methodologies and practices on how to classify and operate in and around at the appropriate when conditions are such. When we have a vacant or derelict building, we've got some insights that we're developing on classification and some suggested building performance considerations. Again, tools based upon building, based upon construction, based upon risk factors that should influence your decision-making process. It has to be this. It has to be more than just showing up and stretching the line and going in. That is the basis and the premise of why we are having these conversations. It is the uncontrolled illegal occupancies, and it's also the pop-up constructions that many jurisdictions up and down the East Coast, especially when we go from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore to Philadelphia to Harrisburg, on into any of the river areas and up the coast of Jersey and into the tri-state area of New York. And we are seeing these pop-ups where we have literally the roofs that are being popped off, and we have the newer hybrid construction being built upwards because of the lack, and typically we're finding them on our row house and row frame construction. These are creating some significant perceived and actual challenges of our operation. The top emerging influencing issues are this: large area residentials and mega mansion type settings. It's our multiple occupancy apartment, townhouse, and condominiums, both of them type 5, and as well as the conversions that are occurring in type 4 heavy timber reutilization of our buildings. It is our commercial hybrid structures. It is both our small footprint commercial buildings, typically 25,000 square feet or less, that are going to be significant challenges and are showing historically, based upon injuries, line of duty deaths, the near misses, from what we've gathered, that these are the continuing problems because they are smaller size footprinted buildings. They are not typically the multiple alarm, large footprinted structures. So we do what? We typically institute and implement residential strategy and tactics, tactical windows. Our operations are conducted out of a premise that the building is going to support these interior operations or the conduct of operations in, around, on top, or underneath them, and unfortunately they are not. So again, these small footprint structures, and we are seeing the adverse larger scale commercial and industrial fires over the last 24 months and how they are significantly challenging and actually resulting in some challenging legal issues for the fire departments and the commanding officers that may have been operating at those particular fires based upon the large property loss and large economic losses that the occupants and owners encountered. Again, the adaptive reutilization or reuse or repurposing of our type 3 and 4 construction. It is the podium mixed-use occupancies. Again, it's this new mass timber and then new emerging type 4 construction based upon mass or heavy timber construction, as well as the integration of CLT in a variety of both type 1 and type 2 construction, and then low-rise hybrids, both commercial, business, and multiple occupancy. So those are some of the challenges that are coming about. We talked about this rapid change, the susceptibility of our buildings based upon those aspects. And then the other part of this, when we talk about company-level operations, we have conflicting best practices. We have conflicting methodologies and models, diminishing or loss of fire service experience, inadequate or sometimes placated risk management, inadequate building, pre-incident building planning, although there's a variety of different apps and programs and platforms that are coming out. We're just not seeing it all, or there's such a vast amount of all of these, we just don't know which is better than the other. So we are just really getting in the early stages of a lot of innovative and emerging businesses and companies that are really pushing technology, and we're seeing just such a great degree of potential out there. But again, it's going to be a matter of what falls out to be the primary users that are going to be the most prominent relative to its usage and its adaptability on the fire ground. It's inadequate pre-fire planning. It's the lack of building intelligence. We just don't know our buildings. We don't know our building construction. We think we do, but we really don't. It's ineffective collapse zone management, no building or fire literacy that leads to history repeating events, and again, the evolving construction sciences as they relate back to methods and materials of construction. So that's sort of a very broad painting of some different elements here. I certainly think that when we take a look at the broader standpoint at the company command level, based upon these emerging influences and trends, it really does fall back on the evolving building and construction sciences that we are just not studying. We're not aware of it unless you are directly and for whatever purpose involved in studying, learning, and reading and staying up to speed with construction, architecture, engineering, fire protection engineering, what the latest architects are doing, what's the latest fad or trend, both in terms of design, construction, as well as engineering practices. I also think that it's the aspects of fire dynamics within the building. That's why we stress the compartment relationship as being our top three building compartment and company, and those aspects related back to faster fire propagation within the building proper. It's the increased susceptibility to collapse and compromise, the decreased time to engage and operate, diminished occupant escape time relative to survivability, narrowing windows of tactical engagement, an increasing demand for effective and, or efficiency and effectiveness, which gets back to that third element of company human performance. And then it goes back to knowledge, skills, abilities, technical competencies, the gaps, the strengths, the weaknesses, the education experience, and lastly, the accountability, proficiency, rigor, and fortitude that come about. So, you know, it's part of all of those elements. And again, I think one of the things that I'm lastly going to talk about here before we close out is that our focus is on this relationship of building construction, risk management, firefighting behaviors or firefighter behaviors dealing with human performance. That is item number three. Item four is incident command and the operational perspective, and the last being safety and situational safety. So those are the core five elements that are actually part of our five-star command model that we developed back in the early 2000s, and that's really a critical element to our overall discussions and parameters. We ultimately tie this back into five fundamental pieces on the fire ground dealing with the building's anatomy, construction systems, the age, vintage. We talk about era. We talked about this and recognized that era and vintage was so important. We actually conceptualized this concept back as early as 2001, started really promoting it online. Some others sort of took that and made it their own also, unfortunately. But the concept of era and vintage is really deeply rooted and integrated based upon construction and architecture and what was being built and how it was being built. So it's era, vintage, construction type, occupancy risk, it's parameters of that, it's construction systems, building anatomy. The third piece of that, the five-star command model, is compromise and collapse susceptibility. The fourth piece is methods and materials that are based upon era and vintage, and then the fire dynamics that go into the building is the fifth piece there. So a lot of moving parts, and again, hopefully we've given you some very, very broad-based insights into what we are going to be furthering along in terms of discussions and suggested processes, methodologies, and practices relating back to the influence of the built environment and occupancy risk, coupled with insights that are drawn out of the continuing emergence of research and data and data points that are coming out of this various types of studies across the board, and how that truly influences both command and company level decision making. So that is sort of the conversation, the insights that we in this episode. Again, we really got going, and you know, once I got into this groove here of our conversation, you can see that there, number one, there's a passion for that, as all of you should have when we talk about the built environment, talk about strategy, tactics, whatever position you're in, and both as a firefighter, I would offer you this. As a firefighter, there's a number of critical books that are out there that I would encourage you to be reading, become comprehensive in their insights, the technical data that's out there. At the command and company officer level, guys, you got to be looking at a variety of different books that that dovetail in and help support our traditional fire service textbooks that are out there through the variety of publishing houses and groups that are out there. But there's also a highly suggested reading list of other books that I would suggest and promote to you that you should be getting a hold of and reading. I would go so far to state that if there is one other definitive book that one should have that's on their bookshelf or on their reading list, it's that. And that book is Building Construction Illustrated by Francis Ching, C-H-I-N-G. There are a variety of those editions that are out there and available online through Amazon or other resources. And book houses, but Building Construction Illustrated. It was one of the most defining books that I got. I actually received and have my first edition of that I had gotten as I was going to school in my second semester in architecture school at Syracuse University, of all places. And I still have that in my bookcase along with all of the other subsequent editions. If for some reason you are not able to either financially, due to financial restrictions or other restrictions, you cannot obtain or find a copy, I will offer you this. Send me an email and I will send you an electronic version of one of the older editions, but nonetheless, it still will be of tremendous value. It really dovetails in with many other conventional and traditional fire service books that are out there, but again, there is this need to expand upon those elements there. So again, I really truly didn't want to go as long as I did on this particular episode, but nonetheless, I think we covered a lot of good information. I guess everybody was listening in instead of calling in, and that's a good or bad thing. I certainly don't apologize for it, although we did not promote the fact that we were going to have any type of call-ins. But I'm always anticipating that one of my good co-hosts that are out there would drop a dime or a quarter or a dollar, whatever it may be nowadays, but do a quick call-in. But I think that in our next episode, we're scheduled out for the month of January. Take a look, keep an eye on social media for some of the other up-and-coming dovetail things that we'll be doing independently, both online during the month of December. We're just finalizing those schedules here over the next couple of days, and we'll be rolling out some more expansive webinars during the month of December and as well as into January, and then also our Buildings on Fire lecture series that are going to be part of our webinars with the introduction of the Anatomy of Building Construction, the ABCs, again, a multi-part series that you'll be able to take online both during daytime and repeat it during the evening hours, and then look forward to our Main Street Old School Hazards on Today's Fireground that'll be up and coming, and we also have a couple of series on insights on row house fires and firefighting tactics and strategy dealing with our building facts model. So some really cool things coming up over the next couple of weeks and certainly into January. For those of you that, again, are listening in on the download, again, thanks for being loyal listeners. Actually, for all of you, thank you very much for following us. And again, I get a lot of feedback from many individuals. It's very humbling when I see you guys in person and I hear the stories about listening in on the programs or downloading them, as well as any of the other things that we share. We're really hoping to get back online in a very active promotional standpoint with constant continuing and evolving and a whole variety of new things coming about in the early part of next year with our websites once they go back up and live after spending, again, a lot of great years here on fireengineering.com's Fire EMS blog that unfortunately went dark a little over a year ago. But we are really looking forward to continuing to share that information both with the good family at Fire Engineering, both on the print as well as the online versions. There's a lot of opportunities that we can continue to provide those efforts. For those of you that are planning to go to FDIC in April of next year in 2023, we will be there in person. We'll be doing some in-the-street exercises in a non-formal standpoint, so take a look at some of those up-and-coming things. We're going to be continuing our trend of doing reading the building insights, online through social media while we're there at FDIC, and we will be presenting, I believe, on Thursday of that week. I don't have the date immediately here in front of me, but on Thursday morning we'll be doing a presentation, a 90-minute presentation there at FDIC. So we look forward to having the opportunity to see you guys in the streets at FDIC. If you're interested in some programming, again, just reach out. If you're interested in the PDF there, the electronic version of Ching's book, I'll send that out to you if I get an email from you guys. And again, stay safe, be diligent. Just keep an eye on what's going on. Keep an eye and take a look at your built environment. Get out in the streets and take a look at and identify the stuff that you know and identify those things that you don't know. And the stuff that you don't know, seek out answers through whatever sources. So until next time, companies are in quarters and off the air. Stay safe, but keep in mind there's a job being worked somewhere in the streets, in your city, across the country, and around the world. doing what we do best and being who we are, and that's firefighters. So take care, everybody. Stay safe. Very happy holidays in the ensuing couple of weeks, and we'll see you during the month of December or next year. So signing off, stay safe. Thank you very much.